Welcome to Manga Cubed, episode 113, your one-stop for manga news and commentary for the week of September 15th, 2014. I am your main host, Derek, and I am joined by my co-host, Mo.
Morning, everyone.
Good morning, indeed.
Or afternoon.
Yeah. All right. Yep. Yes, indeed. It's a good week, I think. Well, not really that great. I've been sick for quite a bit, so hasn't been all that great.
Too.
But I can think of worse weeks. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah. All right. I think it is about time. Well, yeah. I think let's go ahead and get straight on into the news, shall we?
Yeah.
All right. Starting with the got ink all over my. Self. All right, starting with the Japanese comic rankings for September 1st through 7th. And in 10th place, we have... What do we have in 10th place?
I'll go start with 10th place. We have 10th place, Saiki Kuso no Sainan, Volume 10. Wait, did we say the week of it?
We did already.
Okay, done. I was ranking September... For the week of September 1st through 7th.
Yeah, I said it. I said it. 9th, Oku, The Inner Chambers, Volume 11.
8th place, World Trigger, Volume 7.
7th place, All Haru Ride, Volume 11.
6th place, Serve at the End, Volume 6. 6th place, Volume 6, and then weeks, and then the highest rank is 6.
Indeed.
That's hilarious.
5th place, Natsume's Book of Friends, Volume 18.
4th place, Toriko, Volume 21.
Cool. 31.
31. I don't know why I saw that as a 2.
Alright, 3rd place, Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, Volume 9.
2nd place, Bleach, Volume 64.
1st place, One Piece, Volume 75.
With a whopping total of 1,775,905 copies.
Could have sworn we just recently had a One Piece that came out, but okay then.
Yeah. Yep. This is the latest one. I mean, this is the latest one for this week.
Yeah, could have sworn we had one before that, but anyway. New York Times manga bestseller list for August 31st through September 6th. All right. In 10th place, we have...
10th place, we have... In there. 10th place, we have High School DD Volume 2.
Indeed, in 9th place, we have Attack on Titan, Volume 1.
8th place, Skip Beat, Volume 33.
7th place, Monster Musume, Volume 4.
6th place, Time Killers, Kazue Kato Short Story Collection.
5th place, Pokemon Adventures, Volume 24.
4th place, Nisekoi False Love, Volume 5.
3rd place, Attack on Titan, Volume 13.
Oops, hang on, What was that by accident? Hang on.
Alright, 2nd place, One Piece, Volume 72. 2nd place on its first week. That is fantastic.
That's probably why you thought, oh no, it's first week. Okay.
And, I need to go buy that one, but then again, I remember there's a bunch of One Piece I need to buy.
I'll make an entire bookshelf dedicated to One Piece. Anyways, 1st place, Yu-Gi-Oh! 5Ds, Volume 6.
Indeed. Alright, what do we have for the North American anime and manga releases for September 7th through the 13th?
Okay, for the anime releases, we only have two. Just very short. For anime releases, we have Listen to Me, Girls, I Am Your Father, Blu-ray Complete Collection. Oh my god, that series.
Oh dear. Yeah.
I only read the spin-off, which is more, I prefer the spin-off more than this one.
Because it's apparently not...
this is the original.
Because it's not freaking disgusting? Is that why you prefer it?
Yes.
Jeez, yeah. We also have Tomoko Market DVD Complete Collection. Both of them for about $60.
Tomoko.
Yep, and... Alright, let's see. For the manga releases, we have 07 Ghost, Volume 12.
Arata the Legend, Volume 19.
Battle Angel Alita Last Order, Volume 19.
I wonder when that will actually end up on Kodansha, because it's the publisher's Kodansha Comics, you know, on Crunchyroll. Next we have is Blood Blockade Battlefront, Volume 6.
From the New World, Volume 6.
Hayate, the Combat Butler, Volume 24.
His Favorite, Volume 7.
I like how that idea worked out. Yes. Legal drug omnibus.
Seven Deadly Sins, Volume 4. Oh, hey, hey, hey.
And Sherlock Bones, Volume 7. We have no other releases.
Sadly, that is not the porn parody.
Wait, there's a what?
No, I'm saying that Sherlock Bones would be the perfect name for a Sherlock Holmes porn parody. Except this isn't. It's
I'm quite
about
sure
a
there
dog.
Is.
This is about a dog.
Thank goodness it's about a dog. Very among the dog then.
No. Thank goodness it's about a dog and not the porn parody.
Okay. Wait, there's a porn parody called Sherlock Bones?
No! I'm saying that would be the perfect title.
Oh, okay. Jeez. Okay.
Look at what you made me do. You made me yell at you. Badmo, go to your room.
I am in my room.
No, wait, your room's full of toys. You go to the garage. That one was a bit forced.
We had no garage.
Oh. All right, well, let's talk about the news itself. We've only got a few pieces of news, and the first one is frickin' hilarious.
Yeah, this one's actually pretty interesting. Mitsuru Adachi can't tell his own characters apart. Okay, so apparently on this talk show, Ame Talk, the better manga artist Mitsuru Adachi was given the challenge of identifying the main character of his manga Touch, Tatsui Uesugi, among three of his characters he had drawn for other series. The problem was he couldn't figure out which one he couldn't figure out which one was actually Tatsui Uesugi.
Now, to be fair, he is from a time in manga when the character designs for main characters tended to be the same between your different works. A good example is how Rumiko Takahashi tends to have very similar-looking characters. Like, most of... You've got Ranma and Ryoga for one, but there's a couple others where the only way you could possibly tell them apart is thanks to the haircuts. Which, if you don't give them different haircuts, then you've got a problem. So, but that's kind of hilarious. To be fair, he's had a career over multiple decades, so I would imagine that part of it has to do with the fact that he can't, that he's, you know, that it's been a long time. And also, this kind of just emphasizes the importance of the whole silhouette, in silhouettes and character design.
Silhouette.
Yeah, you know, because, like, you know, if you see a silhouette of Mickey Mouse, you know who that is. You see a silhouette of, like, Indiana Jones, you know who that is. You see a silhouette of Goku or Luffy, you know who that
Goku
is.
Goku and Luffy, yeah, because, well, Luffy was Star, it might be pretty hard to figure out in some ways, but...
Yeah.
Actually, no, he wouldn't, but Goku would be very easy because his hair.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, so those are characters that are very, you know, that's how you develop a memorable character, is they can be identified if you just see their silhouette.
Unless they're seen from above, like that one Pokemon episode.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, for example, Ichigo Kurosaki, who... Mm-hmm. I mean, you could, if he was wearing his Soul Reaper outfit, you could identify him. But if we're only talking his face, you'd be a little more hard-pressed to identify him. And somewhat the same with Naruto, if it's just the, you know, just the silhouette. Mm. But, all right, what else do we have?
And that could have been information. Okay, One Piece books, licenses, acquiring Eyeball and Flowers for Cronus manga.
Okay.
The first volume is going to ship in April. The first volume will ship in April and May of next year.
Oh, cool.
I don't know what this series is, but...
I don't know any of those, unfortunately.
Nor do I. Plus, I never heard of Mitsu Adachi. I'm very sorry. I just need to mention that.
I know who he is. I just haven't actually read any of his books. I happened to pick up his, the second omnibus of his cross game baseball manga, and I know the story about it, but I picked the second volume up when Borders was going out of business and they had a sale, and I was like, I've heard of this looks interesting. Unfortunately, I don't have volume 1, so I'm gonna have to go out and buy volume 1 at some point. But anyway, yeah, what about these other releases here?
Well, as far as I know, I'm looking at the series, I don't remember anything. But yeah, these other series, okay, more of them. Sublime Imprint adds Love Stage, Ginger Honey, Special Delivery, and more titles. So, oh, it's a boy. Okay, Sublime is a boys' love manga publisher.
Ah, gotcha. Fair enough.
Well, good for you. Shoujo, no, Shonen Ai, and I guess Yaoi fans. Good for you.
Indeed. Fair enough.
Okay, and last bit of news. Kenichi, the mangaka, Strongest Disciple Kenichi Shun Matsuena draws 3-1 shots.
Oh, cool.
Apparently none of these are have any reference or are related to the series that just ended.
Sadly, no.
No.
Yeah, unfort yeah, 'cause that would be nice. I do hope that at some point he will be drawing a sequel to History's Strongest Disciple. Well, not even necessarily sequel, but like
Sequel.
a sequel one shot, 'cause nobody ever does that. Or at least it does. It feels like they never do that. Like when you take these people that have had long-running series or series that they've ended a long time ago, and they do a one-shot to get, for it. They never do the sequel one-shot. They always do a this happens some unspecified time before the end of the series. And I'm just sitting there going,
Seriously, what's the point of doing that, you guys? Anyways, there's three series. The first one is Kanata, the second one is called Haruka, and the third one's called Damn Roman numeral three eyes.
I'm curious. Yeah,
Roman numeral three, there you go. But
I'm
yeah,
kind of curious to see what they do.
they're gonna be they're gonna be published beginning on November 12th. So keep an eye on your calendar for that. Starting November 12th, sorry.
Yeah, I am kind of curious about what these new one shots will be like. I guess he's just kind of testing the waters to see what he can do for his next series. But I'm kind of wondering whether we're going to start off with full on blatant fan service just to begin with, or if he's going to try to go a more subtle route rather than having tits all over the place. Instead, he tries to focus on the stuff that actually made him good or made him popular, which was the comedy.
Yeah, the comedy and the action, but
The action was quite excellent, but personally, I got into it because it was just so funny. He's a really he re, when he really wants to be, he is very funny. And I mean, honestly, the first time I saw his History's Strongest Disciple Kenichi and I saw his art style, I was initially turned off because I looked at it and I'm like, oh my gosh, look at the way those women are drawn. Good
you mean his
grief.
original one?
No, I mean, when I first saw it was during the final battle against Ragnarok, when I first discovered the series, I looked at it and I was like, good lord, what is wrong with these people? They have bosoms upon bosoms. And yeah, I was just thinking, you know what? I don't think I need this. This looks ridiculous. Then I went back and read the original back when he was a little more not so ridiculous and over the top. And I was like, oh, hey, this is really funny. I'm gonna read the sequel. Wait a minute. This is that series that I said I'd, geez, whatever. It's really funny, so I'll suffer through the ridiculous body shapes. And then eventually I got used to and came to enjoy the art style. So let that be a
The art
lesson to you
style.
people. By exposing yourselves to bad things, you get used to the bad things. By which I'm saying I'm referring to the art style.
Yeah, High School of the Dead, that art style can be very.
Yeah, there's a reason I'm not getting into that, because I know eventually I would get used to and start enjoying the art style.
Well,
And
the
if
thing
I
about
do
that.
that, I may as well hang up my hat as
Well, like I said.
a manga reviewer.
Well, actually, like I said, well, let me finish. The thing about High School of the Dead is that it's on hiatus. It's been on hiatus since last year. And there's a thing about it where they're pretty much, let's just say, its hiatus is probably just about best. Hunter's hiatus in that, with Hunter, we just have to wait for Togashi to come back. For this one, the creator actually wants to know how many people really care about the series before he actually continues it.
Well, that's smart.
Yeah.
Don't ask me, you won't like my answer, sir.
You like my answer?
Yeah, but
It's all right, but I get tired of zombie apocalypse. stories.
One of these days we really should go over History's Strongest Disciple Kenichi, and I'm talking a full-on review of the entire series.
I'm fine with that. Believe me.
Yeah, since, you know, since it isn't available in the U.S. yet, and since it's just ended, I don't know what the chances are of it coming over here are.
Probably it's not going to come over. It's just ended, and
yeah.
And as far as we know, the content is very, the content gets very, very insane later on.
Yeah, it's, well, I mean, but come on, this is brought over Tenjo Tenge. They have no freaking excuse.
Yeah, they have no freaking excuse. Tenjo Tenge is an abomination.
I mean, yeah, let's be honest. Tenjo Tenge has nudity and rape in it. So if people say, oh, we can't do History's the Strongest Disciple Kenichi because of the boobies, excuse me, you've already done it, and you've done it with series that are even more demeaning than this one. At least History's Strongest Disciple Kenichi happens to have a lot of good qualities to it. But nonetheless, like I was saying, the volume-by-volume reviews, I tend to prefer doing those only for series that have actually been licensed, just because it's easier to say, okay, I'm doing volume such and such in this, because I have the actual volumes. With something like this, I'm thinking...
Plus actual translations, you know, actual official translations, so we don't go, what's this character's name again? Is it this or this?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah,
I hate
true.
That part.
Yeah, but I'm kind of thinking what we'll do is, well, I'm not sure. We'll kind of see, because what we need to do first is read the whole thing again. I've read the first part multiple times, and I kind of feel I need to read it again all the way through to the end, now that it's ended, to really get a sense of the entire series, because a lot of the stuff that I was reading happened to be taking place, you know, happened to be just me reading it once, week by week, and I don't think that gives me the best impression of the end of the series, so I do feel like I'd need to read the whole thing. This is something that we'll have to just kind of do, read bit by bit, because it's a very long series. But I think what we'll do is eventually, once we've both caught up and read the series again, what we'll do is we'll have a episode dedicated to it and use that kind of as a opportunity to get more people, to introduce more people to the series, and also as a way to ask, you know, licensors to please, please bring it over here. Which, you know, I mean, the more attention it gets, then hopefully the more people will be interested in bringing it over, because that's a series that I'd really like to own. It is,
and it's been out, and it's been running for like 12 years. That's,
yeah, yeah. The fact that it, yeah, I mean, it's, even though I didn't quite care for the ending and I felt it lost a lot of steam towards the end there, it's still one of my favorite series, just because of how funny it is and how well the action is. The fan service is, of course, an unfortunate side effect, but
very, very, very unfortunate.
Yeah, we'll get into that later. I think what we might even do is we should read the original and then read the second version, and then kind of do 1 week talking about the original, or maybe just, you know, start off talking about the original and then kind of go from there. But for now, I think it's time for us to move on. Let's go ahead. Let's go ahead and do our manga review. This week we are going over The Seven Deadly Sins, Volume 4. Which, let's see, which continues on the fight. You've got King and, you know, King has frozen Bon in stone, but then Elaine shows up and I'm like, wait, who's this? And then King is like, wait, how come you can see Elaine? How come you get to see her, but I don't? And it's, you know, Elaine is King's sister, and he recognizes her voice, and King, he can't see her. And she's, turns out that there's a backstory with King and his sister, that there's something he did wrong in the past, and let's see, we get back to the fight with Gwila. And it turns out that Bon's special power is called Snatch, which means he can he can steal things, basically. So, from a distance, even. Which, yeah, on top of being immortal, which is kind of helpful. But Gwila continues to trash them. She sends Meliodas flying, and then Diane catches him, and Yeah, she catches it. Speaking of a series with big boobs, Diane catches him inside her Titanic boobs, and she's. It's kind of hilarious because she's all like, "Are you okay?" And then a little squeal. And Meliodas is like, "Why do you look so happy?" And she's all, "Aw," when he jumps out. And that's kind of funny. I'm just like, dude, you're always obsessed with groping women, and here you are in a sea of bosoms, and you're just all nonchalant about it. The man just doesn't know what he wants.
He
But
knows what he wants, but it's just, yeah.
yeah, and then we continue the fight with Anguilla, and then King has decided that okay, I'm gonna stop being an enemy and I'm going to help my friends. And so he defeats Guila. And well, he beats her, but then Meliodas does the final blow. And yeah, so they leave, they come back to the real world, and yeah, we find out that Guila is not actually dead. She was actually half dead to be able to enter the land of the dead, the capital of the dead. And then let's see. Yep. So you end up with just everyone having those little in-between moment. You get to see that King has this, seems to think that, when he turns into a human, he looks better, but he turns into this fat human wearing fancy clothes. And you're just like, dude. Yeah, it's this it's
As if wanted poster, though. As if wanted poster.
it's the only one that's actually accurate. Well, I guess Diane's is accurate as well. It just doesn't emphasize the fact that she is a freaking giant.
Like, if you see this woman, well, no, I don't think so. I don't see that big. I think we've got the wrong person.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. Wanted poster.
Yep, and then we find out that apparently Diane, Bon, and Meliodas lost, sold, and had their sacred treasures stolen. And yeah.
The funny thing is how they're pretty much just, oh yeah, I lost mine. I sold mine. Mine got stolen. Like,
Yeah. I just love their expressions. Diane's is especially hilarious because she's doing the whole cutesy playing with your hair, sticking out your tongue thing. And King is just like, you morons. But then, of course, he. Love that he starts getting angry at Bon, at Meliodas. But then once he turns to yell at Diane, he's like, well, you can't be blamed for losing it.
it is true. See, you lost it, but he steals things. So how did he get stolen in the first place?
Yeah, that is kind of like, wait, how did someone steal something from you?
How does someone steal something from someone who steals things? I don't get it.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Well,
It's,
I mean,
come on.
it's possible, but he has supernatural stealing abilities, so what the heck? What the heck, Bon? But.
Really else, it's just funny. It's like, oh, I just sold mine. I need the money. Like, okay, well. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyway. So. Yeah, so anyway, we find out that, Elizabeth's sister Veronica has come to bring her back. And she is with a guy that seems to be an absolute massive douchebag. I bet he's never going to be a likable character at all. Yeah, Greer Moore was kind of an ass when he was first introduced.
Yep.
But I kind of like that, when they take certain characters and they introduce them wearing armor and helmet and a helmet that covers their face, so they kind of start off as this faceless, soldier, kind of like, with the stormtroopers, how they wore the armor in Star Wars, they wore the helmets so that they so that they would be not human, basically. It
Oh, that's why they wear helmets anyway.
dehumanizes them, and a lot of times that's why you see the enemies wear face thing in movies wear things that block their faces because it helps dehumanize them, and therefore you can root for the hero slaughtering them all without feeling bad because that's actual people that are getting killed. And I'm actually kind of thinking that Star Wars would have been much improved if you had have had some of the stormtroopers that actually took their helmets off and were actual characters, but whatever. Also, the beginning of chapter 28, that cover page, I'm just like, good lord, this is about the closest I've ever seen a manga for boys ages 14 to 16 come to a gangbang.
Wait, what chapter?
Chapter 28, the one with all the Meliodas's
fondling all right.
Elizabeth. That's the one problem that I have with this manga, is the whole Meliodas being all, oh look, I'm going to nonchalantly grab your boobs or grab your butt, is, I don't know, it's like, it's just this random weird background quirk. But the weird thing about it is that not enough of a big deal is made out of it, you know? I guess, or I'm not exactly sure what I mean. It's kind of like, if you're not going to make a big deal out of it, then why even have it? If it's, but I don't know. It confuses me.
Maybe it'll have to get touched on at some point. We don't know when.
But. Eventually, I guess. But yeah, so they end up going to rescue Elizabeth, and you've got Veronica, who is trying to convince her to, you know, not, you know,
work with the seven deadly sins.
Exactly. And it's kind of, you got kind of a fun scene as they're sneaking in, and you've got Grimoire that's standing looking guard, and then King uses his power to sort of nudge a teacup so it's falling off, and then Grimoire turns around and catches it, and it's a really funny scene because it's this absolute giant turning to catch this tiny little teacup. I swear Grimoire got shorter and smaller as later on, but yeah, so they fight him, they try, you know, doesn't do him much good, they end up in what's a really cool action scene, because as he's going to catch the cup, he notices Meliodas, he tries to fight Meliodas, but, and so he ignores the teacup, and Meliodas then fights and knocks him out, and catches him in his hand just before the cup falls to the ground, and then he catches the teacup. And I'm just like, okay, that is one of the strengths of this series, is the absolute badass action. This Seven Deadly Sins knows what action is and how to do it right. Mm-hmm. So I am a big fan of this. And then, let's see, and then and then you move on, you've got this, you know, Veronica had said, oh, Meliodas, he's not actually really human, etc. or whatnot. And then you get a really cool scene as, you know, these fireworks are going off and the shadows are reflected onto this rock behind them. You've got Elizabeth with her regular, normal shadow, and you've got this freaking giant, demonic-looking shadow coming from Meliodas, and you're like, oh, jeez. That's something. Yep, and then, let's see. And then we finally get to see the
Holy Knights.
Yeah, the leaders, Dreyfus and Hendrickson, the leaders of the Holy Knights.
That's when they appear. Okay.
And let's see. And then you got some more fighting. Gil Thunder shows up, takes care of some random punks. And wait, Howitzer. Yeah. Oh, it's Howitzer and Gil Thunder that took care of them. And let's see. Remind me. Gil Thunder is Dreyfus's nephew.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, good. I kept getting the familial relationships confused.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
Yeah, Dreyfus's brother was the Great Holy Knight.
Zaratras.
Yes, Zaratras is Zaratras, and that was
Gil
Thunder's father, and so that means that, yeah, Dreyfus is Gil Thunder's uncle, meaning that, as we later find out, Grimoire is Gil Thunder's cousin. So hopefully in the current chapters they acknowledge that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's see. Yeah, and then we talk about how Meliodas destroyed a kingdom that was once as powerful as Leonis.
Destroyed, he decimated it.
Yeah, wiped it off the map when he lost himself in his wrath, and that's why he's the Sin of Wrath. Right? Yes.
Yep.
Yes, he is. Let's see. More talking. We get to see Hendrickson, who has a demon, and he's going to use it to turn these two other knights into some of the new generation of holy knights. And then we go on, and we have the little bonus story, Bond the Bandit, which was where Bond...
Pretty long bonus story.
Yeah, a very long bonus story, because he comes to the fairy forest, he meets Elaine, she was basically the princess of the fairy people, and it's not made as clear at the moment, but eventually, it's basically what is implied later on, is that they fall in love, even though in this it doesn't really flat out say it, you know. But he's basically trying to get the drink from the well of immortality, or, you know, and so on, and become immortal. And they basically end up, you know, he stays there, they end up hanging out and getting to know each other, and he teases her, etc. But then a demon attacks, and interestingly enough, this is well placed, because it immediately reveals that the demon that Bon fought was the same demon that Hendrickson is going to use to turn these other knights into a new generation of holy knights.
Yep.
And Bon fights them, but it's no good. He's dying. Elaine's dying. It's in a really gruesome scene because that's not her heart. That's the demon's heart. Yeah, Bon uses his ability to steal the heart of the demon. But it turns out they have more than one heart. Elaine gets shot right through her chest. And Bon is... Right as... You know, I guess in the same attack, he is... it's actually a follow-up. Yeah, he gets cut pretty bad. And so he's dying. Elaine takes the water of immortality, or whatever it was called again, puts it in her mouth and feeds it to Bon, basically. And thanks to that, he is now immortal, and he defeats the demon. And, yeah, so, let's see. And then it turns out the forest is destroyed, but there's one last seed. I'm not really sure why Elaine didn't drink of it herself. Oh.
Sorry.
And we've been so good about that. Put it on silent. Oh, put my phone on silent, actually.
I swore it was on silent. I'm making
it. Well, it's a good reminder, because mine wasn't on silent either. But yeah, so turns out that after this point on, Bon is now known as Bon the Undead. And then there's an even single bonus short story. If you don't work, you don't eat, and they end up using King as the buyer. So he basically floats around and goes and buys their ingredients and stuff for the inn. So that was the Seven Deadly Sins, Volume 4. I'd have to say, quite fantastic.
I particularly liked it because of Bond's, I wouldn't say comedy, but just the way he just acts around things, like, when basically he was just like, there was that part where he was just, King was talking, and then Bond was like, hey, did you stop talking behind my back, and the spirit just threw him, and like, so much a lot about it. No, really, that was just pretty funny.
Indeed, yeah. This is definitely in the part, the part of the series that I, you know, this is in the middle of when this series was really, really good. With the upcoming volumes, we're going to reach a bit of a low point once we get to the tournament arc, as I think we've discussed before.
Which volume was it you guys got into the series anyway? Because I remember I got into it like way earlier when it started.
It was pretty early on. I mean, I remember hearing about it pretty close to the beginning, but I don't remember where I saw it.
Yeah, I think I got into it when it was like when it was in the middle of Volume 3. Yeah, one chapter in Volume 3. I think you got into it in the earlier. Next volume.
No, I'm pretty sure I got into it before you. Wasn't I the one that told you about it?
No, I was the one that told you about it.
Right, yeah. I think, I'm trying to see if I can remember that right. Let's see, did you?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I remember. I do remember. I was like, hey, I think you like the series, and you love knights and stuff, and magic, and here you go, here, you can read it.
Well, except I'm trying to remember if this was one of those cases where you told me about it, but I'd already known about it by that point.
Yeah, I think it was probably that, too.
That does happen sometimes.
Yeah, that does happen.
I can't remember, it's been too long, my memory isn't that great, but yeah, this
I'll take the credit for this video.
Yeah. I heard about it somewhere and started reading it, but yeah, this is definitely in the part of the series that's really, 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 really good, and it's absolutely, you know, it's pretty fantastic. I really enjoy this series, and I think the thing about it is that, mostly like I said, the characters are kind of fun, are really fun, but it's really the action that really gets me. That's what I'm here for, is to see the action, to see them, you know, see the fighting and the and the swords and the armor and the wahei and all that. Yeah, three guesses what the wahei is.
Wahei.
Yeah. But, you know, it's kind of like, this is a series that I really love because it takes the shonen formula and then it gives the trappings of a European, you know, Western European style medieval fantasy, which you really don't get that often with a lot of series, you know? A lot of times it's just, oh, hey, we are, this is, look, I have a fantasy, but, and I'm gonna give them armor, but for some reason they all have curved swords. They all wear European-style armor, but they were carrying katanas, because I'm a Japanese manga artist who thinks that katanas are the best, and I'm not going to do any actual research for how the relationship between armor and sword development. Because there was a very strict relationship between those two things in European history. And so to have someone just be all, oh, hey, yeah, I'm just going to ignore all of that and just say...
I didn't even see any katanas in this, so I don't know what you're saying. But...
No, I'm talking about, for example, Vision of Escaflowne.
Oh, yeah, man.
Where it's like, I mean, granted there they use straight swords for the Gaimelefs, but at the same time you're just kind of thinking, why are you... But why did you... Why? This makes no sense.
Because katanas come from my native land, and I must remember my native land. Well, actually, just because katanas are more familiar for them, you know?
Well, yeah,
but I would use rapiers and sabers. Wait, are they more common here?
What?
Back then? Rapiers and... No, sabers, sorry. Sabers.
No, sabers are a more recent development around the Napoleonic times.
Oh, okay.
But nonetheless, I mean, you know, it is understandable because... You know, I like European swords because my ancestors were European. They like katanas, Japanese swords, because they are Japanese. It's fair enough, but I mean, when you start mixing the two, that's when I start getting annoyed. And that's what I like about this. Even though some of the swords are kind of ridiculous looking, a lot of them can be forgiven because they are specifically tied to the abilities... the magical abilities of the people involved, and so I can buy that, while at the same time, if it's just a regular sword used by a regular person that doesn't have any magic powers, then it tends to look like a European sword would. So I just like the fact that it takes the medieval setting and actually follows the medieval setting. The clothing, for the most part, fits. You know, I mean, there is a little bit of some anachronistic design in the outfits that some of these people wear, but at the same time, it all fits into a medieval kind of setting. So we're not, you know, they're actually going all the way with this instead of being all, oh, hey, we want to have a show about knights jousting, except we're going to set it in the modern world because we don't want to do any research into what the medieval history was actually like, and also because we want all of the knights jousting to be girls with big breasts, and therefore they will...
That series!
Yes. And therefore they will have armor that will provide absolutely no protection because thanks to the mounds on the chest plates, the tip of the lance is now aimed directly at their heart, thanks to that armor design. I think in that entire series I only saw... like maybe one character who had armor that looked somewhat like it would deflect a blow, somewhat. But nonetheless, I am getting off topic. Seven Deadly Sins is fantastic. Volume 4 was fantastic. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, the next volume is the one I'm interested to read through again because, you know, the next volume, that's the one where, you know, I was like, oh no, this is not good. I think we talked about this.
Sure we did, but well, you know, for people that are just listening to the manga reviews, well, you'll see what we're talking about once we get there. But yep, for now, I think it is time for us to take a quick break and move on to the next segment, shall we? It's time for the chapter commentaries for Weekly Shonen Jump issue 42 for the year 2014. And we are starting off with the second of those three first chapter, new series, Hi-Fi Cluster.
It's pronounced Hi-Fi Cluster. You'll see why.
Yeah, there's a running gag about how this kid doesn't know how to pronounce hi-fi. Yeah, so the basic setting is that they have these patches that you can put on that give you increased abilities.
Patches.
And the main character is this kid that no matter what he tries, he just can't, he can't use any abilities, so he's the one guy out. And because he has no other abilities, he, since he can't use any abilities, he has to work for these shady guys who make him do, basically use him as an errand boy to transport illegal things. And one of those illegal things is something called a hi-fi label.
Yeah, labels. They're called labels.
Yeah, the labels, that's it. Yeah, and it gets stuck on him, and we don't know what it is. Then we have this guy that turns out to be a cop, and he's goes in and arrests the guys that the main characters is working for, and he basically he's using the he's part of a special unit that uses these the hi-fi labels that have the abilities of historically of geniuses, basically.
Yeah, when I saw that, I was like, hey, it reminds me of something I've heard before. Nobunaga.
Indeed, yeah. And so it turns out that he has the ability. He has the ability of what was it? Miyamoto Musashi? That's right.
No,
Wait,
not
what was it?
Miyamoto. It's Kojo Sasaki.
That's
Miyamoto
stupid.
Musashi's rival.
Oh. That seems like a bad idea, you know. Hey, I'm gonna have the ability of this powerful swordsman. Who is it? Miyamoto Musashi? No! It's the guy that was his rival and history forgot! That's the
Well,
good right guy.
not the one that history forgot. The one that Miyamoto beat up. That
Yeah, I guess he uses it because the dude used an unusually long blade. And so.
And it works with the weapon he uses.
Yeah, it turns out he has a giant freaking police baton. And.
No, because it compensates for not having a sword, so it's used like a sword.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's. Yeah. It's fun. It's a. I kind of like. Series ended ends with our main character getting arrested for being an accomplice and the stealing of a hi-fi label. So.
Because he thought it's a he-he. It's he-he. No, it's hi-fi.
Yeah, it was fun. I like this overall, but I don't know how far I can see it going, you know?
I don't like the main character, the kid.
Yeah, he's a bit milk toast, you know?
No.
He's yeah. Well, I mean, he's kind of like he's the typical, hey, I'm the main character that oh, I can't do anything, etc. He's a bit boring. And also the, hey, I'm the stupid main character. That's eh. I can do without the stupid main characters.
It almost gives me the so-called, what is it? I'm not saying Komatsu is bad, but it gives me that Toriko feeling in a way with the whole how they're probably going to team up.
Yeah. I think it's a promising start, I think, too, but
I'll give it a chance.
yeah, like I said, I don't know how far it's going to go because this is I don't know. I just don't see where this could go, essentially.
Yeah, since there's already a series similar to this, that's the problem
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's move on to One Piece chapter 760. And we begin with Jinbei discovering that Luffy and Law have teamed up together. And so, yeah.
there.
Not sure when exactly this, I guess this t is taking place before where we are in the story right now.
This is probably just news just then. It's just like Jinbei just got that news just then.
Yeah, it could be that, yeah, he's kind of out of the way, and he's someplace that, he's been underwater, he doesn't really get news, and now he's finding out about it for the first time, so I
Oh
guess
yeah,
we shall
because
see.
Fishman Island got wait no wait no yeah, he's been underwater though.
Yeah, he's been away from Fishman Island, so. Yeah, anyway, into the main proper chapter, we've got. I kind of wonder what it says, what Oda thinks about women when the majority of his females tend to be of the nagging variety. Because it turns out the koala is very much like Nami, in that she's chewing out Sabo for acting like an idiot. And because she's saying, hey, you know, you're gonna drag the revolutionaries into a war by getting in a fight with a naval admiral. And I love it. It's like, my brother's in trouble. It's none of your business. And I really do love this. It's like, yes, it is. And she stretches his face out. Which, so I wonder if there's any connection between this and the fact that Nami is can hurt Luffy when she punches him. Because, I mean, normal people shouldn't be able to hurt Luffy by punching him. But when she gets angry, she is able to do it. And, of course, pretty much all the other crew members kind of have the same thing if Zoro punches Luffy spirit. And Sanji.
That's pretty much what Oda said.
Well, yeah, but I'm kind of wondering, what's the connection between Nami being able to do something to Luffy that she shouldn't be able to, and Koala being able to do something to Sabo which she shouldn't be able to do, namely stretching his face out like as if he had Luffy's rubber fruit.
Yeah, I don't get that. Maybe that's
code word for Oda, where it's like, hey, look, these girls that are romantically interested in these characters, they can do weird things to the characters' bodies. Which, of course, is absolute rubbish, because what on earth would that say about Luffy and his crew, since all of them, if they decide to beat up on him, actually manage to hurt him? So, Oda's code word for pirate gangbang. That's what it is.
Aye, aye.
Indeed. Anyway, moving on. We've got, suddenly, for some reason, all the people have decided, oh, hey, we shouldn't have been following Doflamingo. He's been ruling over us all this time, and we hated you, King Riku, etc., etc. Now, even though we captured you and we could probably end this all, we don't want to follow him anymore, etc. And so you get Fujitora that's there, and he's mentioning how he's betting on Luffy, because Fujitora himself can't do anything because Doflamingo is protected by the world government.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to Luffy's fight, and you've got... you've got Law that gets attacked by Doflamingo. Doflamingo uses Haki. He ties up Luffy's arms with his strings. And then we end up the chapter. It's actually kind of a quick chapter because quite a few double page spreads and a lot of focus on action. But we get Doflamingo's backstory. We already knew that he was a celestial dragon, but we find out that his father decided to that their family should give up the greatest power there is and come live in this cesspool of a world. Live like a human, indeed. What a stupid, stupid man. And you get a flashback of Doflamingo finding out that he was kind of an ass even when he was kid.
Yeah.
Because he's like, let's go buy some slaves. I need a gun to go punish these lower trash. And it's like, my mother has died of sickness from living in this filthy place. And suddenly it's like, well, okay, that last one, that's a legitimate complaint there. By the time he was 8, Doflamingo decided to kill his father and see if he could use that to get back in with the Celestial Dragons. But they were like, no, he's a traitor. You're not allowed back in. So after that, he decided to, somewhat like a little child, throw a temper tantrum and destroy the world that they hold so dear.
Well, I don't really care for the Celestial Dragons. They're douchebags anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, I support his goal to destroy them, but at the same time, I kind of have to wonder, what do you think, now that we know sort of Doflamingo's motivation for being evil, what do you think?
Hmm.
I mean, it's not
like... Well, he's not a deal, that's for sure.
Well, yeah.
Deal's just messed up, trust me. He just messed up.
Well, yeah, but that's besides the point.
When I saw this little bit of the past, I was like, huh, reminds me of Deal in a way, almost.
Okay, yeah, I can get that. Yeah, I don't know, because ultimately what it comes down to is it means that Doflamingo is a spoiled brat that never got over the fact that he no longer lived, that he no longer had the privilege that he did before. Which, I don't know, I can see for some people that would be a bad motivation for a character as cool as Doflamingo, because it kind of demeans him a little bit. But at the same time, I really like what it does, you know, what it does. It just shows how messed up he is and how messed up he's been from the very beginning. Because I really hope we get a flashback, because I'd like to see more about Doflamingo's father, because that's a promising character there. That someone that was a celestial dragon who decided, you know what, this is kind of messed up. I'm going to give up my privilege and live as a regular person. Unfortunately, it would appear that he didn't even have any skills to earn any money, so they had to live in some slums, and that, yeah. So that kind of sucked for them, but at the same time, you kind of get this sense that, you know, this is an interesting character, someone that's from the group of celestial dragons, and all the celestial dragons we've seen have been these massive jerkwads. Mm-hmm. And so it'd be nice to see one that, one, isn't as freaking ugly as them, because if you based on the silhouette, his shape looks like Doflamingo's, and Doflamingo isn't a completely hideous person. Well,
he's just hideous on the inside.
Yeah, when he's angry, then the true ugliness shows. But he's not as ugly as the celestial dragons that we saw in Shawbody.
Yeah.
And so it'd be interesting to see some of the other ones and just sort of see, because I mean, those ones at the time, they were designed to be like, you know, complete parodies of what, you know, of a detestable person. They're ugly, so they act ugly, so they're detestable. Well, I'd like to see whether all of them look like that, or whether it's just some of them, you know?
Probably just some of them. I don't think every Celestial Dragon is,
knowing what we know about now, with how, you know, the Celestial Dragons were the previous rulers of the kingdoms that made up the world, the original world government.
Of the 20 kings, only 19 left, and one of them stayed.
Yeah, it was Vivi's ancestors that stayed. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so basically there's 20 different families of the Celestial Dragons. It's not like they're a cohesive unit of jackassery.
Wait, 20 different families?
Sorry, 19 different families.
Okay, 19.
Technically 18 now, because Vivi's family never went, and Doflamingo's father left, so their family are no longer considered celestial dragons. So there's 18 official families left, and I'm kind of curious to meet them all, because I'd like to see whether Oda goes the "they're all these horribly ugly, disgusting people," or if he goes a more interesting route with them, you know? I wouldn't be surprised if we see a Vivi-type character from the Celestial Dragons at some point. Just because Oda likes himself some princesses.
I think we did see a sort of pretty-ish, well, I guess.
Well, no, that's not what I mean. I mean someone that, personality-wise, is like Vivi, that actually wants best for people, even though she's in a position of, you know, privilege. Who knows? Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, should we move on?
I think we dwelled on this longer than I should.
Yeah, we need to. My back's hurting from where I'm sitting. Anyway, Judo's chapter 2. Don't think I like this second chapter as much as the first one, you know?
Because it didn't get you well yet as the first one did.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a really... I think what really comes across is just the weirdness of this artist's, you know, sort of character designs. I mean, weird character designs are all good and fun, but I'm not a huge fan of manga that likes to have a bunch of really ugly characters. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
It's just,
It's because the main character's father is freaking ugly and his wife is hot.
There is that, yes. It's a trope in anime and manga that annoys me, because I'm just like, I'm still single.
Yeah.
Sorry, what?
Shave your beard. Look,
never.
He shaved his beard. Shave it.
No. This is an example of a face that should have a beard. If your chin looks like a ball sack, you need to cover that with hair. I guess that's what it kind of is. It's like, just, we've got a few characters here, including his dad, who looks like he's got a freaking scrotum on his face, and I just hate those kind of character designs. It's But yeah. Anyway, personal bias aside, yeah, it basically sets up the festival, yeah, where, you know, anyone that's out after 8, if you happen to see someone, you have to fight them.
It's like a Pokemon battle with Dewdle.
Uh-huh.
Play that trainer battle team right there.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, when I saw that, I was like, oh my god, it's like a Pokemon battle. Trainer battle. Like, we met Hives. That's Dewdle. Okay.
Yes. And we also get a 2-page spread of the characters that will be important later on. So the main contenders would appear. And we have, let's see, we have Hana's mom, it appears like. Well, I'm assuming it's his mom, unless she has a sister that's about as large as she is.
Well, everyone in the village pretty much can be Dewdling, so.
Well, yeah, but I mean, these are the main ones that we're focusing on. And you've got her, you seem to have, let's see, a short person, a regular-looking person-ish, a guy.
The short mouth guy.
Yeah, I don't know where he is, but you've got the...
He's there.
Really?
Last page?
Okay. But yeah, it looks like there's another woman in the group, so there. Yay. Yay for gender equality and for the fact that I won't have to spend an entire manga watching a bunch of sweaty guys fighting.
Yeah.
Let's just like say...
You pretty much have the same...
Yeah, let's just say that I relate to Mizuki's opinion.
Except
rather than being all, oh, look, a pretty guy, I'm more, oh, hey, look, a woman, thank goodness. All these ugly, muscular men. Gross. Speaking of ugly, muscular men, you've got Hana fighting this really huge-looking, huge old guy. And the dude looks absolutely psychotic.
Well, look at his hands. Just look at his hands.
Oh, yeah, they're all, his entire body is scarred and whatnot, but...
You knowing, I don't, okay.
Yeah, he looks like he's lost it, you know, just, but yeah, of course, Hana manages to defeat him, and he has to get these, has to get the talismans from them, from the people that he fights, and so, yeah, basically, it's basically like the Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournaments, where you defeat someone and you take their star chip, I mean talisman.
I still like my Pokemon idea better.
Yeah, it's a bit
funnier
of a mix.
Because you play the little theme when they meet eyes and then they battle.
Oh yeah, it's basically that with.
But yeah, it is more Yu-Gi-Oh. I have to agree.
Yeah, I mean Yu-Gi-Oh. Granted, you could refuse a battle if you want, but with Pokemon you can't refuse a battle,
which is basically what this is.
But and then you take the star chip token. Bit from, you know, other, from Yu-Gi-Oh!
So,
it'll be curious to see where this goes, but at the same time, since we're moving so quickly into the tournament, I'm kind of wondering, it's weird. We hate fighting tournaments in manga, and here we have one where, chapter 2, it's in the middle of a frickin' tournament.
But this is a sports manga. See, with sports manga, I can forgive torment because you can't just have them run around with doing random people in the streets. I think that'd be pretty awesome. Why doesn't anybody do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a mix of the supernatural with some of these character designs and the strength involved, plus the actual real-life application of judo. But at the same time, because it would be kind of silly to see an actual, I will go out and fight on the streets using judo. That would be kind of silly. But still, I'm a little iffy. We're starting off with a tournament already. And so it feels like it's moving too fast, you know? We don't really know who the hell these characters are enough. And I mean, if it manages to help us get to know Hana and the reporters throughout the course of this and introduce new characters in an effective way throughout the tournament, that I could buy. But I am a bit iffy here.
Well, the timeline here is going to be from April to September. So, let's see, April is the 4th month, September is the 9th. So, about 5 months on Nights for Full Moon from 8 p.m. to midnight. So, it's like it's only Nights for Full Moon. So, that's about 5 matches?
Five nights. You have multiple matches a night.
Oh.
It all depends on who you run into. Hmm?
But it says on night of a full moon.
Yeah. A night is longer than than a judo match lasts.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So they go around, they meet someone, they beat them, they take their talisman, they go around, they keep walking, they meet someone else, they beat them up, and they take the talisman. You can probably get through a few people in a night.
Part one, part two, part three, part four, part final.
So, yeah, if I can see how the story would work if you take the basic setting of here's the tournament, and then do here's the first night, and then after that have other stories, you know, leading up to the next night, rather than if it's basically here's the first night, and then let's skip forward a month, and here's the second night. You know, that I would be pissed if it just skips, you know, if it just skips forward like that.
That'd be pretty stupid. I wouldn't like that either.
I would really enjoy seeing seeing them actually use the tournaments as a framing device, and then have stories in between. But I guess we'll see what happens. And so, if I can get over some of the weirdness of the art.
Yeah, don't worry. When someone throws someone into the moon, you'll be happy then.
Damn right. All right.
We're all hoping for that, I guess, now.
Yes. All right. Let's move on to Naruto Chapter 692, Revolution.
Speaking of Revolution, that game came out.
Yes, let's talk about that instead of this bullshit.
No, I never played it, though.
I don't care. Talk about it. Okay, well, let's give a basic idea.
Well, the DLC doesn't look bad at all. I mean, okay, sorry. Talk about the manga.
Yeah, okay, so basically it's the wrap-up of, oh, hey, we've sent the dead people back, and now the tailed beasts, they get to go back to their homes, except for Kurama, who is going to stay with Naruto, and then... This was a part of the story that I don't really like, because for so long the nine-tailed fox has been this evil, demonic presence, etc., etc. It's going to corrupt Naruto. He hurt his friends when he transformed into the fox form, and then suddenly he's a freaking tsundere.
The what?
No, really, he's like...
Oh, Kurama.
Yeah, where it's all, oh, hey, you know what, you don't have any, staying with Naruto, that won't be a problem. And he's like, well, if you insist, old man. And he's got that, I'm not doing this because I want to, tsundere look. And I'm just like, way to ruin your character. It wasn't even a proper character, but you gave it character and you freaking ruined it. And then, yeah. So, basically, they're just like, hey... Yeah, so Sasuke, you're going to wake up everyone else that's in the Infinite Tsukuyomi, right? And he's like, yeah, but first I'm going to execute the current Gokage. And I'm like, son of a bitch! Here we go again.
Ugh. Yeah, we all had a feeling. It was like, okay, something's up with Sasuke. Why is he acting all, like, quiet and...
Well, I mean, we knew that we needed a reason for Naruto and Sasuke to fight. It just annoys me how literally everything Kishimoto does with Sasuke's character is to make him a more annoying prick. I'm just going to say it. You know, all shipping aside, personal preferences aside, if we end this manga with like a time skip epilogue and showing all the married characters, if not Sakura is married to Sasuke, I will flip I'm so angry I can't even enunciate. I will flip a... I will flip a desk.
Okay.
That's what I was trying to say. Just because this is... I mean, really, that not only is this another chapter that shows exactly how awful a character Sasuke is, and I really wish he wasn't involved in this series, but if it ends with her being, oh, I still love him despite the fact that he literally always, anytime it looks like he's doing the right thing, decides to come around and say, I'm going to do the wrong thing. And I'll just be like, you know what, fine. I usually give her character the benefit of the doubt because I don't want to be one of those jackholes that's always, oh, she doesn't do anything. She's a terrible character. I hate her. But if that's the direction Kishimoto goes with her character, I'll be like, great, you had one good character, one decent character, and one absolute pile of shit, and you just turned them into two piles of shit. Congratulations. And one of those is a puddle of piss now. I just hate Sasuke so much, and chapters like this show why I hate him so much, because it's like, I'm gonna be a dickhole, and it's like, blah blah, revolution, blah blah, there's a deeper meaning to my childish outbursts. And I'm just like, if anyone after this bullshit decides we're still going to be friends or I still love you, I...
Yeah, I would not. Yeah. That's part I would not like. If they actually, okay, Sasuke, we'll forgive you for what you tried to do. You mean you're going to forgive him for trying to kill 5 people, including one of them were actually one of your friends, and one of them was actually a close friend to your teacher? Really? Really, Naruto, if you do that, I swear.
That's the thing. If this ends, and that's kind of the problem, is we're dealing with shonen manga logic, where it's, you know, you can be forgiven for anything as long as you're a friend, etc. But if this ends with Sasuke having attempted to kill the leader of their village multiple times, when it was Tsunade,
yeah, he didn't
even
do it once.
You know, if that become, you know, if we end with him being forgiven for that, I will be furious, because that's complete BS. This guy is mentally unstable, and if I were Tsunade, the first thing I would do is have him be all, oh yeah, you're forgiven, you're a member of the village, lol, wait, nope, we execute people for the kind of crap you pull, so goodbye, you're dead. Mm-hmm. Everything involving this moron's character is complete bullshit, and even the promise that Naruto will beat the crap out of him is not worth putting up with this awful writing and this awful character. That's it, I'm done. This is absolute horse shit.
But yeah, here's how I'm gonna say. Okay, the first time he wanted to go kill the Hokages, it was due to the whole, you know, when he went to that summit.
Yeah,
what was his reason for trying to kill him again? Because it was different reason from this one.
I don't know, it was something about the Hokage being in charge of, you know, the one that called for the death of his family.
Oh, yeah.
Or something, I don't know.
Yeah. I guess he put Donzo then.
Yeah, right. And I'm just like, you know, you can have good characters that are all about revolution, but his motives just keep changing so much. First, it's, I'm going to kill my brother. I'm going to kill the village for making my brother kill my family. Oh, I'm going to kill the Gokage for, you know, just because they didn't actually do anything, but they're the ones in charge of the ninja world, and I am...
If I can eliminate the leaders, then we'll get to create a revolution. I'm like, okay, so eliminate the ninja leaders. How about the lords that they serve? You gonna eliminate them too, Sasuke? Because I'm wondering if you are.
And what about
anything?
Yeah, and what about the curb stomp that will follow when every single ninja loyal to their leader decides you are a complete ass and murders you?
They'll murder you and your, you don't have a team. No, you still have a team, but then they'll murder you and your team. So
yeah,
have fun with that.
It's very weird. It's just, he's such an inconsistent character with his motivations. His motivations are constantly changing. But the problem is that every time his previous motivation turns out to be wrong, he chooses a new motivation that allows him to keep doing what he was doing before. He's a petulant child that all he does is he just wants to kill people. And he constantly finds new reasons to do so. So, quite frankly, this guy needs to be executed. That is the only way this series will end in any semblance of happiness, is by having this insane criminal, I don't know, what do they do, lethal injections, Chidori to the face or something, I don't know. Just
in our world, in the shonen world, he wouldn't really die, but the closest I would actually like to go with is that he would be eternally blind, because, you know, eijutsu, how about we get rid of those eijutsu from them?
Yeah, I hate this character. Let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on.
World Trigger, Chapter 75, Invasion Part 21, Good Grief. This one was okay. It wasn't very memorable. The big problem is that, with these, is that the chapters kind of sort of fuse together. But we did end with, what's-his-face, Miwa, showing up and deciding, I'm going to fight this guy. So, cool.
I think it was interesting how Osama was like, hey, go help Chica, and he's like, I don't need to listen to you.
Yeah, and it's like Osamu's like, I'm gonna hold this guy off. You save Chica, and I'm like, you're an idiot. But yeah, I mean, it was a good chapter, but currently this series is boring me a bit. You know, I'm not. You know, it's just not. Nothing is really standing out.
It's sci-fi. That's why you're not used to sci-fi, are you?
No, it's not that. It's just the story. You know, it's just it had these moments where it was doing really good. But with this big story that we're getting is just not right. You know,
I don't think it seems to matter.
It's getting boring.
It's an anime.
Well, yeah, but nonetheless, that's don't remind me. Every time I hear about one of the manga that I hated at first getting an anime, I get furious at the fact that Cross Manage got canceled and we never get to see it as an anime. I keep thinking of what could have been, and it would have been awesome. And then I think about how the Japanese readers decided they didn't like it, and I decide that every one of them is a jackass.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, it just doesn't make any sense that series was massively popular among the, you know, among the U.S. and the other places that get this version of Shonen Jump. It was massively popular, and yet just the people in charge, they're just like, it's not doing well enough in the main market, so we're going to kill it. And I'm like,
and then it's why if they had just did Jumpstart, like, earlier, like, at that time, we could not, this is kind of the reason why I'm actually glad for Jumpstart. We're allowed to actually decide, you know, for the new series, if they can stay or not this time.
Yeah. Well, it's whether they stay in our magazine, not whether they stay in the Japanese Shonen Jump. But
well, if they don't stay in the Japanese Shonen Jump and then they stay in our magazine, how did they
no,
make money?
No, they would. No,
that'd be possible.
What it means is that will it stay in our magazine, as in while it still exists?
Oh, okay.
You know, it's not a decision of whether we get to decide whether it continues being published. No, we get to decide whether we get to see the rest of the chapters, whether it gets canceled or not. That's entirely up to the Japanese readers still. So, but nonetheless.
Yeah, World Trigger chapter wasn't that great. Let's move on.
It bored me. It really did bore me, and the past
it finally bored you? It's been boring me for a while.
Well, that's the thing, is like it was doing good for a while, and I was like, oh, that's good, but now it's gotten back to the point where it's boring, and I keep thinking, you know,
the little
bit of good stuff that we got from this was not worth losing World Cross Manage. And I just keep thinking, oh, this horse shit is still around, I no longer get to see the best sports manga I've read in a long time. Anyway, let's talk about a good manga. Toriko, chapter 292. So, it basically, you get to see, you know, they're preparing air in different ways, etc. And what's kind of interesting is that the other three kings, their gourmet cell demons are coming out. And they're transforming into them. So, apparently Acacia's full-course meal is giving them the ability to control that. So, that's nice. And, yeah, we also find out that the people in the village were their ancestors were just ordinary humans who were slaves of the Nitro, and they had gourmet cells forced upon them. Rather than, you know, eating them, they were forcefully injected, and of course, most people died, but the others that survived, they mutated.
Eating is the safer way, while injecting is, like, a quicker, but also more dangerous way. The eating part kind of reminds me of the, was it Mermaid Forest? Mermaid Scar?
Yeah.
Remember how they fed that one girl the mermaid meat, like, little by little, to give her the tolerance for it? It's kind of just like this.
It is, yeah, it does kind of remind me of that. But then we carry on, and it looks like everyone collapses except for Toriko and his group. And then, apparently Tepe is there.
Yeah.
And he's evil now because he stabs Komatsu through the heart and rips out the heart and crushes it. And we're just like, okay, how is he going to survive this? Because we know Komatsu isn't going to die, because Shimabukuro is constantly doing the whole, oh, look, the main character, you know, look, this character is dead, but oh, wait, no, they're not.
They're gonna probably inject him with gourmet cell, probably. That's the only way I can see
I
it.
could see it. I could see them being all, you want to save him, you have to forcefully inject him with these gourmet cells. But at the same time, what I'm kind of thinking, Tepe being evil is a little strange, you know?
Well, he is working with Neo.
He is, so he's probably still being controlled, but I could easily see the way they get out of this is by having, is by, you know, it turns out he's not actually evil, and he actually just, he didn't actually remove Komatsu's heart, or he used some kind of, you know, reviver technique or something to help him. I don't know. I guess we'll kind of see. But yeah, it's pretty nasty. I'm moving on.
Yeah, that was the most grotesque chapter Toriko I've seen. I
In a
mean,
while.
other than the one with the guy. Remember when you skeleton?
Yeah, that part. I was
Yeah,
trying not to.
try not to. I mean, chips here, so
Indeed.
have a tolerance, I
All
think.
right, shall we go to Nisekoi chapter 138?
Yeah, let's do that.
Daikichi, where he takes Malushka along with him and they go to visit Onodera's place and, you know, they hang out for there a bit, try some different sweets. Malushka sees how Ichijo and Onodera are behaving around each other and she realizes, oh, they must have a thing for each other. And then, let's see, and then the battery dies on the phone, so she can no longer translate.
People were probably calling out, it's like, when's the battery gonna die?
Yeah.
Yep, it died.
But then it turns out that she actually speaks Japanese. She just wasn't sure because she might make a mistake. So she basically thanks Raku for the lovely time. And then she kisses him. Dun 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 dun.
On the cheek.
Yep. And he's like, oh, don't worry, that's just a custom. You know, kind of like how in Europe it's like, oh yeah, it's like a baiser instead of,
Well,
but you just
in
greet
Europe,
someone with a kiss. I always laugh because I can't remember where it was from, but there was like this manga that I saw that said, oh yeah, in America, it's normal to greet people by kissing them. And I'm like, bullshit. That is totally not normal.
that's Europe, I believe, isn't
It
it?
is Europe, but it's just funny
Or is it
because I'm like,
France?
yeah, it's, oh, it's just, it's mostly France. But yeah, France and Switzerland, those kind of general areas.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, but nonetheless, I have to laugh whenever I see that. I can't remember where it was, but immediately I was like, well, we've just discovered a manga artist that knows jack shit about the world. Because it's like, no, trust me. Americans get weirded out when when French people try to greet them with a kiss. Trust me.
We need handshake here.
Yeah, exactly. So it is kind of funny whenever you see a manga that just betrays the fact that the writer has absolutely no idea about anything outside of Japan. So that it's always weird and kind of funny. But talking about Nisekoi, turns out that oh, there is no such custom. Dun dun dun. She leaves, and then I'm like, wait a minute. How are they? I thought they were supposed to get in. Wait, why did she leave? I thought they were gonna sneak in and get Chitoge out. What's going on? Oh well, it was an okay chapter. I mean, for people that like Onodera, it's a good chapter because it's another one of those that has a character noticing those two getting along well, etc. So I thought that would be that one. That part's good for people that enjoy that.
Which one? What?
Onodera.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed.
So the princess gonna be gone? Well, we haven't seen Chitoge return yet, so.
I really don't see this manga going the route of, hey, Chitoge has a doppelganger. For very long, I just don't see
Yeah,
that.
it just wouldn't work.
So, I mean, it would be an interesting new direction, and it would be a twist that I didn't expect to see, but, well, I guess we'll see. All right, moving on to Bleach,
Chapter
596.
596, yeah.
So basically, Mayuri has taken control of them by making the dead captains, by making them his own zombies. And then
Yeah,
he's.
have we noticed that there's one particular other Shinigami that's not besides them when they were with them at that time?
Well, yes, and I mean, but also worth noting is that Hitsugaya isn't there either.
True.
So I'm kind of curious to see, I don't know, whether they're going to remain zombies, whether these characters are actually dead, because that would be a pretty ballsy move to have. I mean, the visor guys, who gives a crap?
But, who gives a crap?
You know, I would say it would be a pretty ballsy move, because Hitsugaya is a fan favorite character, and Rangiku is one of, seems to be, or at least you kind of get the sense that she's one of Kubo's favorite characters, just because of how much she got involved in the story later on. Mm-hmm. So I am a little curious. There we go. I am a little curious to see whether he'll keep them dead. I have a hard time imagining he'll keep them dead, but then again, this is the end of the series. Mm-hmm. And so chances are that they, might stay dead, just because he's like, okay, we're ending the series, I don't need these characters for later, you know. But then again, he ended up with a bunch of the Arrancar being alive that had been actually legitimately killed, you know. They were the ones that were killed by that one dude with the skull face that was going around cleaning people up. You know, the implication was that they were actually dead. So to see them alive makes me think, yeah, right, these characters are going to stay dead. But, yeah, and so the love guy, turns out he can't do anything because the zombies are now Mayuris and they have no need for love. And then what's her...
What is that?
And then what's her face appears? The girl, the short, the skinny girl.
The nozzle.
Yeah, with the ability to eat people. And there's a bit of blood on the side of her mouth. So you kind of have to wonder, what exactly happened? Did she have to eat that other girl to protect herself? That would be kind of curious and kind of dark. So I would be okay with that, I think. If we went that dark route. But anyway, it was an okay chapter. I'm curious because I'm wondering where exactly he's going to go with this, because Kubo is currently doing things that I don't believe he's actually going to commit to doing. So, yeah, what did you think? Nothing, apparently. Alright, moving on. Let's talk about Rurouni Kenshin, Master of Flame. Part 2. And, yeah. So, this one, you end up with... They discover the dead body of, what's-her-face? Hanabi, that's it. Yes. And also of worth of noting is that, what's-his-face notices how she has... How she ripped a button off of a, she has a button in her hand. And so he's wondering, I wonder, what's this about? And so... The owner of the place is all, oh, hey, this was a suicide, and etc. So, you know, he's not going to investigate into this. And it turns out that Akari and Kagari, the two girls, are missing. So Yumi is desperate to save them, and, you know, she wants to get, what's his face again?
Shishio,
that's it. Thank you.
You forgot his name.
I did.
The most iconic character in the series, and you forgot his name.
It's been a couple years. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, I read this. I just read this once through, and somehow I remember it because I just saw his picture. I'm like, oh, it's Shishio.
Well, yeah. I mean, I should have remembered that, but yeah, she asks him for help, and he says, "No, you're weak." And then she says, "You know what? Fine, sell it to me. Sell your strength to me." And she doesn't have anything, or at least she doesn't have enough. Yeah, she knows that he doesn't want money, nor does he want to sleep with her, because he doesn't want to be with someone he has to pay for, basically. And so, turns out, for a heartless murderer, he's actually a bit of a romantic.
He's got class.
yes, indeed. But, yeah, so, basically, and I mean, yeah, that still makes sense, because, I mean... He didn't want to pay money for her and paying services for her to sleep with her. That would be the same thing, basically. And she says, you know what, I'm going to sell you my life. So basically she says, take it when and how you wish. And then she's, you know, it's like, you know, if you're going to hell, I'll go with you, basically. And so...
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so basically...
Did you say something like that before?
I'm not sure, but this puts into context the scene at the climax of the fight between Shishio and Kenshin. Because if you remember, when Kenshin's about to strike the finishing blow, Yumi jumps in front of him and blocks him, but then Shishio stabs through her and stabs Kenshin. Mm-hmm. And so at the time we're like, oh, what a heartless bastard, and the series tried to play it off, the manga still tried to play it off as, oh no, he really did care for her, etc., and this is a tragic thing. Well, at the same time, you're like, he freaking murdered her. But this actually explains it, because it's like, it also explains why she was okay with it, because that was the price.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually, it expands upon the original in a way that isn't retconning, so I have to say I actually really like this. I mean, I know I wasn't a fan of the reboot thingy, whatever, that was stupid.
Yeah, it was not really reminding me.
Yeah, that was just dumb, especially because it was all, oh hey, look at how goofy and silly we're getting with these fighting styles. What I really like about this is that it feels more, I mean, it's more tragic, it doesn't have the humor of the original series, but it feels more like a part of the series, you know? Because tragic backstories were a thing for Rurouni Kenshin. And so this feels like it really, really fits in. And also, as we move on to those guys that, that army that is kidnapping the girls, and they're going to sell them because, you know, Western people want, like, things like that. And I'm just like, that's insulting, but also kind of true, in the past then. And then Shishio and his people attack. So we get to see a bit of fun bit of fan service, all these people that we'd only really seen when they got defeated. So actually being able to see them fight and actually be rooting for them, in this case, was a lot of fun.
No, yeah, the 10 swords.
Mm-hmm. Yep, some of which don't actually have swords. I enjoyed seeing the, what's his face, Anji again. Just because, like, yeah, he was cool. He's the only guy that I actually like among these guys, because he's the only one that wasn't an asshole. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess, what's his face, the sword hunter Cho turned into a good guy, but he was always kind of an asshole anyway. But, yeah, so they defeat them, and then you've got Sojiro uses his speed to wreck the one guy's life, and you also got Hoji, who earlier had noticed that, what's-her-face, the dead girl, had ripped a button off of her attacker's clothes. He notices that the big dude with the two swords was missing a button, I think, was it? Yeah, was that what that was? I think it was. Yeah, that's him missing a button. For a second, I was like, wait, is that him noticing the button, or is that him shooting him? The panel layout there is a little awkward, because it shows...
That's him shooting him.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, in the first part, it's like, he notices in the corner, he notices that thing, and then he sees...
Oh, yeah.
And then you see him shooting the guy. But the panel layout in that bottom half of that page is a little weird, because you see Hoji standing with his gun pointed to the side of the page, and then you see the panel of the dude attacking him, and the way it's laid out makes it look like the dude's coming from the side. So that's a little awkward and not very well put together, I'll have to say. And yeah. I've got a cat walking around me. But yeah, so it turns out even Hoji, the dude that was just all, I'm just the bureaucrat, turns out he's actually kind of a badass too when it comes to guns.
He's very precise. He doesn't just use guns. He can use like any weapon that just works for him.
Yeah. And of course the climax of this is awesome, because you've got the one dude that's all, I've already beaten you in my battle simulation, kind of making fun of those, you know, those kung fu movies where they have the, you know, kind of like that one movie Hero.
Oh yeah.
You know how a lot of the fights involved them sort of visualizing it in the first.
When he keeps taking steps towards the Emperor's Throne, and then goes to a simulation of one type of story and such, I'm like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's, and that's kind of, that I think is kind of silly, just overall, but I like the way it makes fun of this by, it's like, oh, I did a battle simulation, and it's basically taking that same concept of, you know, because the idea was they're so good that they can determine who will win just by thinking about it in their minds, and here you take that exact same concept, except the guy doing the simulation in his head is a complete moron, because he has absolutely no idea who Shishio is, and in his defense, who would expect the absolute badassness of that double page spread where Shishio just sets the dude on fire? It's absolutely glorious. And yeah. And then of course you and the girls get bought, and darn it, Cat, you're going the wrong way. Do not go in front of my mic. Sorry. You end up with the two girls being bought and taken to this temple where they will be taken care of, which, thank goodness. And then we find out that Hana Homura, her actual name is Yumi, and I have been using Yumi all this time because I couldn't remember the name.
I was using totally this confused because I'm like, who's Yumi? I'm like, wait, oh, what?
Yeah, of course, I can't remember Shishio's name, but what, this woman that who shows massive cleavage every time she's on panel? Of course I can remember her name.
Clearly you can remember any woman's name.
Yes. Well, almost all of them. But anyway, well, they buy the battleship, and it's being sold by what's-his-face, the final battle of the series.
N.
The final villain of the series.
N.
Perfect. And no, Cat, no. Get away from my mic. Sorry, he's trying to be all cuddly, but he keeps going in front of my mic, and I'm like, do not do that, you are going to knock it. But, yeah. So, basically, you end with a surprisingly touching scene between between Shishio and Yumi. Mm-hmm. Where, now that he doesn't have to pay for her, now he's like, I'm into you now. Which I think is kind of funny. He's like, aha, I don't know. He's like, I have managed to get the milk for free without buying the cow, as horribly sexist people will say. But
yep.
Yeah, so I have to say this little special extra chapters, they were absolutely fantastic. These two chapters. I did think that it was a little odd. We started off being a little darker than I'm used to with Rurouni Kenshin, not counting the Samurai X OVAs, which were just tonally absolutely different from the actual series. But I do like, because Shishio was kind of this, you know, he was this sort of ongoing darkness to the series. He really was kind of like, he was the Frieza of the series, basically. The villain that everyone loved and kind of wished it had have ended with, you know? Because N, the actual final villain, was kind of ridiculous and stupid.
Yeah.
So everyone's kind of like, let's end with Shishio, shall we? And then we don't. So, kind of like how Dragon Ball fans wish we had have ended with Frieza. Sorry, what?
Oh, sorry. Oh, never mind.
Okay, but that's that. So, let's see. Shall we move on to Assassination Classroom, maybe?
No, we don't have any chapters still.
Son of a bitch. Okay, still chapter 101. This is ridiculous. There's so
and
many
still
laws out.
Chapter Shokugeki no Soma either.
No new chapter either?
No. Nope.
Good lord.
I know.
Maybe,
it's just...
maybe we should talk about the Raws.
Raw.
Yeah, just the
what's
raw
going on.
Yeah, just the Raw Assassination Classroom is like just like a reading of the Raw without understanding what's actually going on.
I don't think people want that. They'll be like, what are you saying even?
I want that. And just be like, and then Irina says, "Oh, I've been wrong. Please, I want to have your babies, Karasuma." And then see how close to the actual reality that is.
Wait, which arena are we talking about?
Good point.
Totally confused.
Crossover. Slightly pedophilic crossover.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Let's just move on to Fairy Tail.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
Let's stop being silly. Wait, what happened in this chapter of Fairy Tail? I forget. Let's
we're on chapter 400, actually.
Oh, are we? Cool. Mm-hmm. Let me open it up and let me take a look. So I take some.
Yeah, I'm looking at it too. Actually, the thing about the cover chapter of chapter 400 is that it's not even a double page spread, which is what I was expecting.
Well, that's curious. Yes, yeah, it's more just, well, it's Lucy, Natsu, and Happy.
Hey, so Eddie,
that's what's important. And yeah, moving on. Oh Jesus! Whenever I look at these, I always notice how no cat, you are not going in front of my mic.
I actually do like how in the little side notes, as he says, Fairy Tail 400 chapters here, and it's got a plot twist you're not going to believe. I'm like, oh, okay, he's already giving it out.
Yeah, well, so the chapter is basically everyone reacting to Acnologia showing up, and everyone's like,
pretty much saying, no more, we don't want another time skip.
Yeah, everyone's like, oh, the Dragon Slayers are reacting, just because, like, oh, what's going on here? And, yep, and then you got Natsu hears Igneo's voice, so Igneo's like, oh, I took him in, I taught him speech, culture, and Natsu starts reacting, you know, and I'm all, oh my gosh, my theory is going to prove to be right. Natsu is actually a dragon in human form. And then I was wrong, because Mashima actually managed to twist me, because it turns out that Igneo was in his heart all along.
That totally explains that Fight Festival arc.
It does, yeah. So it's like, oh, hey, I sense Igneo, because Igneo's there. It's
absolutely... Why can't I get through? That's because Igneo's been inside you all the time. So that's why you're like...
You're an adult! Sorry. Yeah, but you know, this is just absolutely hilarious, because the trope is, I will be with you always in your heart, even though I'm dead. But this one's like, no, literally, I am within you, and now I'm gonna kick some ass, because I'm a badass dragon. And so I'm just gonna wonder, and yeah, I mean, talk about a 400th chapter, that's amazing. Yep. Absolutely, this was pretty fantastic. It was a twist that I didn't see coming, because it didn't really make sense, unless we assume that the caves that Igneo was in was actually not in, you know, Natsu's mental scape or something. But at the same time, it also doesn't make any sense, because you had, before Natsu met Wendy, you had Grandini comes and visits Igneo. So was that just a mental thing? I'm going to assume that it is, but it is kind of weird. I will call it a bit of a plot.
What about when they first met Acnologia?
Huh?
When they first saw Acnologia, you know, the first time. Why didn't Igneo come out then?
I guess there was a reason for it. We don't know what it is yet.
I hope we get that reason, and then I'll be like, okay, Mashima, you're actually a very capable manga artist.
I do have to say, this was kind of one of those moments where I wasn't entirely sure. Yeah, I actually kind of liked it, I have to say. All right, well, shall we move on to Seven Deadly Sins, Chapter 93?
Yep.
All right, well, basically, Bon gives away, hey, you know what, this is the guy that gives you your power? Well, you're screwed, because I'm the one that killed him. And then he beats Hendrickson, yes, into the ground and throws into the caves, and then Bon destroys the red demon. And they follow after Hendrickson. Yes, Hendrickson. And it turns out that he's got a... What was it? A gray... What type was it? Did it say? An ash gray demon that's a far superior breed compared to the red demon. And it's this giant angel-looking thing, kind of. Almost.
Angel-looking? That's just terrifying as all hell, man.
It's got angel wings.
No, the face. It reminds me of something I've seen before. Or I think it's probably from Dark Souls. You know, I never really played the game.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the general kind of the design aesthetic between the Angels and Evangelion.
Yeah.
Which it's pretty big, and so
kill it.
Yeah, Hendrickson takes power from it, and he was hoping to have more time to research, but turns out that he's back to his normal self. Except he's...
I like his normal self better anyway.
Yeah. Not sure why he changed before, but yeah, now he has these weird little wings and horns and whatnot, and claws, and Bon kind of got his ass kicked. Because he is, well, actually, no, that is the one part of him that didn't get kicked. Because that's all that's left.
He lost the top half of himself. I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah, chances are he's not dead, but still. Yeah, now we see how
Can he
they're
be?
going to.
Oh yeah, he'll be dead.
Yeah, now we see how he's, you know, how Hendrickson's gonna come back from being defeated by this. Good grief. Yeah, I thought this was a pretty fantastic chapter overall. I mean, we're learning more about the demons. That's kind of where I felt the series is needed to go, is teaching us more about the demons, because a big problem with, you know, a big problem with the pardon me, a big problem with the series at the moment was that we didn't quite, there was still some stuff we didn't know, and we needed to find out. So this lets us, allows us to, you know, delve a little deeper into the mysteries of the world of the seven deadly sins. And I am curious to see where we're going and exactly how the series will continue from here.
Yeah.
So, yep. All right. Let's see. Were there any manga, other manga we needed to talk about?
No, not really.
Not really? Excellent. Shall we wrap up then?
Yeah, let's do that.
This has been a Manga Cubed episode 113. Stop trying to sit on my computer, cat. For the week of
September 15th.
that, 2014. I have been your main host, Derek, and of course I have been joined by my other main host, Mo.
Dang right.
And yeah. This week we went over Seven Deadly Sins, Chapter 4, Volume 4.
Yeah, volume four.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So, let's go ahead and talk about the author comments for the week, starting with Hi-Fi Cluster Ipe Goto. Thanks for having me. This is going to be rough, but I'll try my best. I'll also try to avoid accidents. that's probably a reference to all those other manga artists getting in accidents or getting sick.
All right, we'll hold you to that.
Oh,
Anyways.
oh gosh, this next one is absolutely horrifying.
One Piece Ato Oda. I keep running into old friends. What's with all these coincidences? Is my number coming up soon?
Unless that number is for cold cuts, Lord, please no. That would be absolutely horrifying. Oda dying before he finishes One Piece. That would be quite possibly. That would be awful.
I don't want to think about that. I mean, other series have already lo have some other series not as popular, but still, they've already been discontinued because their authors died before they could finish it.
Indeed,
Yeah.
indeed. All right.
Yeah.
Judo's Shinsuke Kondo. Thank you for your comment last week, Horikoshi Sensei. I'll work hard to create something fun and full of passion. I have no idea who that is.
Horikoshi, probably his editor, I'm not sure. But Naruto's Masashi Kishimoto. I'm having trouble with a stool sample from my general medical exam. What are you supposed to do if you have diarrhea? Drink lots of water. That and take a suppository afterwards.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's not much you can do in that situation. I mean, you need to drink lots of water to replace the fluids lost, but at the same time, the more fluids you put into you, the more liquid your poop is, so.
And drink banana. I mean, eat eat banana.
Eat a banana, yes.
Not drink banana. You can't drink a banana.
Well, they have banana milk.
Well,
I'm gonna look up a
have
recipe
an
for that.
actual banana.
I keep tr wanting to find banana milk, but because I keep
My mother
hearing
tells
about being
me
in
to always have a
Europe,
banana a day.
but
It'll make you
yeah,
poop better.
nonetheless, but you know, but they just don't sell it here in the States, and that kind of pisses me off.
Banana
Anyway,
milk.
World Trigger's Daisuke Ashihara. Looks like there's some World Trigger themed food and desserts at J World. I want to try.
Already?
That's kind of curious.
Wait, what kind of food? Oh, it was probably based off those rabbits and stuff.
It's rabbit. Defeat your enemies. Eat rabbit. But anyway.
Dandan Secret Mon enough, right? Anyways, Toriko Mitsutoshi Shimabukuro. The Hill Valley brand cheese popcorn is delicious. I bought a huge can to scarf it down. Dude, weren't you just saying you were sick a while ago?
and fat.
And yeah.
You know, the thing about, you know, about buying popcorn that's already popped, it's just not as good as the as fresh popcorn. So I don't
You
know why
mean
more
pop it
people don't do
yourself?
that. Yeah, pop it yourself.
I didn't know that.
pop it, lock it.
Hmm.
Move it around. Nisiko is now Shikomi. I went to the poisonous creatures exhibit at the Sunshine Aquarium. Now I'm too afraid to swim in the ocean.
Ah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that is.
But, alright, last one.
Leeches Tite Kubo. I bought a light for my bathroom, but now I kind of don't mind that the switch is broken. Yeah, actually, that's how I feel about my light, except they're fixed now, so,
Yeah. Alright. Okay, we...
And I found where the switch plate is.
Ah, yes. Alright, shall we talk about our rankings now? Let's see.
Yeah.
One, two... I'd have to say three. Four would be... There we go. Alright, my number four is Judo's.
Okay.
And what's your number four?
Judo's?
Uh-oh.
No, really, Judo's.
My number three is... Where'd it go? Toriko.
Oh. My number three is Hi-Fi Cluster.
Really? Oh, okay.
Mm.
Fair enough. That was my number five, actually. My number two is Rurouni Kenshin's Special Limited Series.
Oh, okay.
It was fantastic.
Number two?
Yep.
It's Toriko.
Mm-hmm.
Because holy crap, that ending. But also, I like how they actually delve into the gourmet style a bit more.
Yes, that, yeah, we get a bit more backstory. Backstory, in those are always the good chapters that give us more backstory.
I mean, just not too much, you know, one, like backstory and then action and plot development and backstory once in a while. That works for me.
Yep, and number one is, of course, One Piece.
Because, because relatively short it was. It was quite short. So
it was, yeah, I mean, I was thinking of not having it because it was too short, but then at the same time I started thinking, you know what? No, it's still good. It's good.
I was totally remembering the days when the chapters were mainly chapters were short back then. I'm like, wow, it's short. I'm like, wait, it's short. I didn't remember that. Didn't realize that.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me a bit of the whatchamacallit. The oh geez, my mind's blanking. What I mean by that is it reminds me a lot of oh Lord. It reminds me of the Marineford stories. That's what it reminds me.
Ah, yes. Well, my honorable mention would be Nisekoi. Mm.
It wasn't my favorite this week. But anyway, moving on. Actually, no, not moving on. We don't have any comments or anything. So just remember, burninglizardstudios@gmail.com. Send us emails or leave comments on the episode at burninglizardstudios.com, and we will read them on the air. But for now, it is time for us to finish things up, and we will see you next week, shall we?
Yes.
Yep. Just remember, folks, the manga is always better.
And don't catch a cold or a flu. It's flu season.
Yes. Achoo. All right. See you later.
Bye.